Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today Martin Bonici. Just a word about my guest. He's an Australian Maltese, has been working as an international photographer since 1992. He describes his work as flexible, an approach which is required to cover various subject matters from an array of employers, from individual to corporate clients. Magazine publishers and both ad and stock agencies have all called upon his services, which range from high-end photojournalism, sensitive heritage and historical interiors, travel, cultural travel, sport images, with a strong sense of narrative and an artistic eye. Martin states on his profile page that there is no substitute for hard work, but that a clever blend of communications, empathy, and an eye for the smallest detail allows for a partnership that consistently provides his clients with tailored solutions for all their photography needs. And I'd like to go into that later on when we're discussing the connection between artist and client. Martin has produced a number of solo exhibitions. He is a member of the International Mirka Art Group, which is in fact how I first got to know him. He sits as one of six council members representing Australia and Malta. He's also a member of Room Number 5, Circle of Art, which I hope we'll be hearing something about. I really wish that this were TV so that you could see his beautiful work. But of course, nowadays everyone can enjoy it on the web. Welcome, Martin Bonici.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the great intro.
I said that we got to know each other through Mirka. This was part of the Evenings on Campus festival that we organised last year. A member of staff actually brought my attention to Mirka and said, you know, would you be interested in this? And I looked into it a bit. It struck a chord with me, because Evenings on Campus were always trying to do something that isn't sort of just an exhibition. We like to give it a bit of a twist somehow. And this idea of the exhibition, Human Rights International, it all sort of fitted into the ethos. So tell us a bit about this Mirka encounter.
Well, first of all, we're incredibly grateful that the University of Malta decided to run with our exhibition. The idea of Mirka is it's groups of artists, international artists, come together from many disciplines and to produce exhibitions. Some of the exhibitions are in the name of something, such as human rights. If we think of an exhibition within human rights, in many ways it's like a protest, but it's a cultural protest. So it's soft and non-offensive, hopefully, although at times, hopefully, definitely thought-provoking. And we're so many different people. And the beauty of Mirka, if you think of a group of up to 500 artists, it's like dealing with, in all due respect, with a barrel of monkeys, in the fun way, by the way. The beauty about Mirka is that there are no bloated egos. So we have many international artists with no bloated egos. They love working together, producing beautiful work, and hopefully being able to reach people on a level more than aesthetic. But if that's what it takes to start off with to get the point across, then that's fine.
The array of artists was quite amazing, actually. I mean, really, truly international. Sweden to South America. It's amazing that they've actually got together. And I suppose that
I know it started off as a small group, as these things, you know, friends or whatever. Mm. I suppose the web is a great communicator in that sense. You managed to keep together like that.
Brilliant. Yeah, and it really is truly international. It did start small. How I got involved was through an online arts group, and I was asked to join. The parameters were that you respect other people's opinion, and if you don't agree with them, then especially respect it. We're all different. We're from different walks of life, different genders, different ideologies. But it's not about that. It's about creating. And if you think of it, the beauty in life, it's our differences. If we were all the same, I mean, it'd be nice sometimes, because hopefully it'd mean no arguments. But gee, it's brilliant when you even have a language barrier, and yet some work that's created transcends this language, and it's really quite something special.
Absolutely. And in fact, if anyone's interested in seeing that particular exhibition, we do still have it in our archive on the university website. So, and that was opened by Judge Giovanni Bonello, who gave a very interesting speech, actually. So you also are a member of other groups as well. I mentioned the Room Number 5 Circle of Art. What kind of a group is that? Is it very different from Mirka?
It's actually, it's a different feel, but the same kind of thing. Being, it's actually made up of some of the Mirka members, and that's more commercially based. So the idea is we produce work to sell. That doesn't mean we can't also do a similar thing as Mirka, like we would certainly have exhibitions in the name of, it could be human rights or environment or whatever that may be. But their specific goal there is to come together as an international group and sell lovely work of mixed media too. It could be paintings, photography, illustrating, and sometimes it's a combination of both within the same work, which is pretty spectacular.
In fact, that's what was very interesting about the exhibition I saw, and this idea that you're not interested exclusively in photography.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine somehow that photographers would be rather keen to keep the photographic parameters, but it seems that that's not the case.
No, for me personally, it's not. I draw my inspiration more from philosophers, writers, and painters. Because if one thinks of a photo, or if one thinks of what people perceive a photo should be, people have this perception, they go, I don't want to do anything to the photo, I want to take the image and have it looking exactly like what I saw. Forget it, that's not going to happen. Because what happens, we connect with two things. If we think of a camera is a technical instrument. It will take a technically correct photo for that image to come out on film looking a particular way, very monotone, at times very beautiful. We as humans, we connect with an ambience. An ambience is not only something visual. We have sight, we have the smell, we have the sounds. But how do we put that in an image? If you think of just, say, something like a glass of water. A glass of water with beads on it. We know then that's cold, and if it's a hot day, when you look at that, the first thing that comes in our mind is, oh, I gotta have a drink of that. Or if it's a cold day, it could be a coffee with just a hint of steam coming up. First thing we want to do is put our hands on the cup. So the idea is then to reach people with all of their senses by using the one. And to do that, for me personally, that's where I draw my inspiration more from the writers and the painters. And then I think, how can I do that? How can I be as eloquent as they are? Visually, it's not always tough.
No, difficult equation, that, isn't it? Before going on to speak a little bit more about your personal, your more artistic work that you do just for you kind of thing and for an audience, just a moment to talk about the commercial side of it.
Right.
Obviously, you make a living as a photographer.
Yes.
So, as I said in the introduction, you've had many clients, different people that ask you to do work. As an artistic photographer, do you find it difficult to marry your artistic side with the demands of a client?
Not at all. Actually, I find that it's all about communication. Photography in itself is a communication, but a visual communication. In order to get to that point, I have to think. If you think when I'm speaking to a client is trying to bring me an image that's in their mind. They're trying to verbalize that. My job as a photographer doing the commercial work is to find out, what does the client want? How do they want their image to talk to the people or target audience they're trying to reach? What are they trying to say? And if I need to get to the heart of the matter, what is that? How do I actually show that? And then, of course, when we look at the commercial side of things, that means not taking 1,000 images to get one. That means do it right the first time, and then understanding what the client wants, and then sorting a lot of that out also in post-production to get it right.
So do you feel that the clients allow you to bring your personal opinions and your artistic sort of philosophy to it? Do you find that clients are prepared to listen to you, or are they
That's such
not?
A great question, because when I'm doing work for a client, it's no longer about me. It's about the client. So if the meeting goes well, and so far, touch wood, I'm touching my head, they have, what it becomes about is what do they want? Then what I can do is I can make a number of suggestions. At the point of making the suggestions, what I have to do is listen to what the client wants. Because I myself have been a client of people, and I'll be talking. And let's, for argument's sake, say I say I want a red T-shirt, and I want this and I want that on the red T-shirt. And the person I'm engaging to do the work comes back and they says, yeah, oh, that'd be fantastic. We can do you a black T-shirt with nothing on it, no problems at all. And I leave scratching my head going, you came in with a preconceived idea and you had the audacity to talk down to me. So then if we take things back a step, as a working professional, it's not about me, it's about what the client wants. So first I have to listen, and then I make value judgments, and then I offer them suggestions. If they say no, the answer is no, because it's about then providing a service to make sure the client comes before anything else, really what I think. What I won't do is suffer quality. So long as the quality isn't the prisoner, then I'm happy to go along with what the client's needs are.
And certainly, some people might say that advertising, for example, has always been an art form from the word go. But certainly it has evolved as an art form and is now really at such a high level that the clients would really need somebody like yourself, not a run-of-the-mill. They would need an artist, really, at this stage, because it's become so sophisticated.
It is, and if you think, if we take an image, we can point an image so one or two people will look at that image and go, gee, I really like that. Or we can point that same image, and I'm saying this is specifically pertaining to advertising now, where you can like that image from one of 100 different reasons. The image has to be top quality. It has to have the sophistication, but keep in mind at times sophistication is simplicity. That's where it becomes difficult for the working professional to understand that at times the simplicity is what will sell for the client. The complication of it, that's my problem. The client never needs to know that. What they need is they need that sophistication of the simplicity. The image will reach a lot of people. Put them in that picture, wherever it may be. Have them wanting to buy that product. There's definitely a big art form in that.
What about your own interests? When you close the book on your client and you go home in the evening and you've got a free day and you're just doing your own thing, what do you really go for? I mean, I know you travel, and I hope we'll speak a little bit about that, but what are the subjects that really, really inspire you?
I think, and this is going to sound very broad, but it narrows very quickly, I'm totally inspired by life. But what is that? It can be a macro photo of an opal. It can be the look in a child's eyes. It can be an old person. It can be just a colour. I feel, this is going to sound so wet, but I feel that quite often the subject chooses me. I don't choose the subject. So I can be walking past something and then I just stop in my tracks and go, that is just sensational. That's often how things work for me. What I try and do is stay totally open to the possibilities in life. So my canvas is something the size of anything from a pinhead to everything that our eyes come across. It's huge. What I just walk and then I look at something and then I go for that.
And you have your camera over your shoulder most of the time?
Sorry to say, for my back at times, yes, I do. Carry up to 20 kilos of equipment everywhere where I walk. Sometimes what I find myself doing, though, is I'll be sitting, having a coffee with a friend or even going for a walk, and I'll see the colour of light on a particular thing. Let's say, for argument's sake, it's a tree. First thing I do is I look at my watch, and then I'll go up to that tree and I'll try and examine why did that tree with that light on it strike me like that. Now, if I don't have my camera on me, what I need to be able to do is analyse that enough to know, do I want to go back there tomorrow? Can I use that in a different situation when I see it in a week? And will I have the speed of thought to pick that up again if I see it again? Even if the camera's not on my shoulder, it's in my mind.
You're obviously from Australia, mm-hmm. but you've travelled quite a bit. In your travels, what have you found interesting? Can you think of an occasion when you've been on your travels, something completely different, not something you're very familiar with, something that's really grabbed your attention?
Again, I think the best way I can answer that question is start at the end and then work back is I'm extraordinarily privileged to be able to do the work I'm doing. So if one thinks about that, as soon as you get out and shoot, and for me, travel is as soon as my feet have got shoes on them in the morning, I'm traveling through my life. It often shocks me, and I'm not just saying that because I'm here, because I keep coming back to Malta, and if we think professionally, I can't come back to a place that has nothing to offer. I can't do that because the astronomical expenses. I'm often shocked at the levels of cultural history here, and it's so overwhelming to somebody who doesn't live in it to come here and see the footprint, the size of the footprint. The other day I was at the Manuel Theatre or in Valletta because I'm going to do a shoot there, and I went to do a site inspection. Well, I did my site inspection. The first thing I did is walk in and I had to scrape my mouth off the ground with the sheer beauty in that place. And yet I can go for a walk, if we think of Valletta again, down on the rocks, down near where the water is, and I can see fossils. They're the things that shock me. Just how much is here, and it's geographically the size. Okay, it's not that large, but its cultural footprint is just, it's endless.
And you're particularly interested in heritage photography anyway. I know that you've been into that.
Yeah.
So what other things have you been doing on this trip?
This trip has been probably not as pointed as I have done with others. I did have an exhibition in Gozo at the Arte Gallery, and that was thanks to the CVC Media Group, which I'm very grateful to. They decided to sponsor an exhibition, So what I did is my thank you that I can do is then give that back. Anything proceeds went go to the Community Chess Fund. So that was the preliminary reason for coming here. But then other than that, it was for just shooting things I may not have got yet. I haven't been to Malta in summer, but I've been in spring, winter, and now autumn. So I've got fantastic colour in fields and all of these really brilliant places. What I don't have as much of are some streetscapes that really sort of grab the attention. So I've just been walking around. It would seem aimlessly at times, but never is, and just shooting various bits and pieces, be they streetscapes or some of the balcony supporters on streetscapes, and yeah, just trying to stay very open to what's around.
They very often describe Malta as a sort of open-air museum.
Oh, it is.
And it's really...
It's
really
a jewel. It really is.
And it's got this multi-layered, both from the chronological point of view, from the social point of view. It's really multi-layered. So for somebody like yourself who's sort of got their eyes open for interesting shots, I can imagine there's a lot of that. You're in Malta. You do have family connections here. Mm-hmm. So how do you fit in to Maltese society?
Again, good question there. Well, I do have Maltese connections, being Maltese citizen as well. It's in my DNA. I'm usually here as an observer, which at times can be difficult because being an observer will mean at times being detached. So I'm fascinated by everything I see, and a few people I know have turned to me and I go, hang on, you don't understand Maltese, but I understand body language. And that again, that sort of transcends the spoken word, as it were. But I love it here. People are always very friendly and open to me. Of course, we all have our experiences, and I can assure you, you'll get more than your fair share if you come to Australia. But by and large, I again, it's one of the reasons I come back here is it just works for me. I say it works for me. The people are fantastic. They're very, very helpful. Society from, you know, if we think of what makes up society, it's people that may pick up rubbish from the street, to people that work in offices, to artisans, even the tourists that come through. Everyone's been thoroughly helpful.
I'm interested to hear that a Maltese Australian who is not somebody who has emigrated, your emigration is a generation, if not two, away from you.
Correct.
It is interesting that there is this urge to come back, actually, that there is this connection, that you feel that it's, you feel to a certain extent at home here.
Yeah. And I do feel very much at home here. If one thinks about, say, conditioning, that when you're brought up within a family group and what they identify with is, we can use being Maltese, but we're not in Malta. So as a child, you know that when you grow up, you know your Maltese heritage, Aussie born. There comes a reckoning where one goes, okay, what is it to be Maltese? So, I mean, again, that's a question that has many, many answers. I am lucky enough, and I will say definitely privileged enough, that through the work I do, I can explore that. So I'm able to come here, and not just on a holiday, because it is certainly no holiday when I come here, but with my work, and I can see what it is to be Maltese. Again, I talk about my own history and my own DNA. Well, we look at the cultural history within Malta, because that makes up the fabric of every single person here and people of Maltese heritage.
So you'll soon be going back home to Australia. Have you got any plans for exhibitions or some particular project that you're working on?
And funny you should say that. A few projects have emerged. I was asked to do an exhibition in Australia. It's called the Adelphi Hotel, six-story hotel, right in the heart of Melbourne, which is the city of the arts in Australia. And again, you know, lucky enough that they wanted to do an exhibition of my work and fit the hotel out with my work, which is quite a rare privilege, I guess. Some of the work I'm doing here will be going straight into exhibition. So when I say straight into exhibition, I mean within a week it'll already be on the walls. That hotel gets a lot of guests, both international and from around Australia. So what I get to do is I get to then show various aspects of here in Malta, some of the heritage buildings and so forth. Projects that have just started to loom will probably see me back here again in, I'd say, March, working on a few various things. What it may mean now is basing myself in Malta, but working out through the Mediterranean generally. So it would appear it's come to the time where Malta will be a geographical home as well as a home in the heart, as much as Australia is.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, we've come to the end of our time. Thank you very much for coming on University Matters. And I have been delighted to meet you personally in the flesh after our virtual correspondence over the last year. Thank you so much, Martin Bonnich.
Thank you for having me, and a pleasure to meet you too.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.